prisoners of war. Health Secretary Robert Kennedy Jr.'s removed every single member of a scientific committee that advises the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on how to use vaccines. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
I'm Wiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Good afternoon, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, wherever you are tuned in. You are listening to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. I've been away for a little, so I'm glad to be back with you all here on the airwaves. Once again, very thankful for the support you all showed us during the recent drive. I'm just mentioning that because I was away right after that. But very thankful to those folks who supported both with their listenership and with their financial support. It means a lot to us here at Taking Action and, of course, at WPFW. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And here we are back, unfortunately, with a tough issue to discuss, but I'm glad we have somebody that is very well suited to give us the scoop on what's happening. I want to welcome Michael Cohen from the DC Fiscal Policy Institute. Michael is the senior policy analyst there. Welcome, Michael. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Daniel. And I got to say, the intro music, a bop every time.
That's right. And they're a local band. That's a local DC band that formed out of high school. They're called Muggo, M-U-G-O, for those folks who dig that music. Rooted in some DC history is the opening music. Well, we want to talk about some current DC history this afternoon with Michael. But Michael, before we get on to this hour, we want to discuss what is currently the mayor's proposed budget. We'll get into further details around where the budget is and what's happening with it. But currently, as it stands, it is the mayor's budget that we are aware of that's on the current books, as it were. But Michael, before we get started, just tell us a little bit about yourself and share us any the work that you do and in general, anything you'd like to share.
Yeah, for sure. So as you said, I'm a senior policy analyst at the DC Fiscal Policy Institute. That's my formal title. Informally, you know, I'm a professional budget nerd, love spreadsheets. And so here to, just sort of walk folks through what's in the current budget and, you know, maybe get some framing around the budget.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, because this affects everyone that's listening. All district residents should be aware of what's happening with this budget, especially as we move through the federal budget process as well, and how that'll affect folks in the coming years. Michael, if you'd share with us a little bit, the budget was delayed this year. Typically, the budget is presented by the mayor to the city council at an earlier date, but there were some delays. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I sure can. So I think really the delays start with, you know, the statehood movement. If you think about it, the delays were really directly related to the fact that though we operate as a state, we're experiencing this sort of disenfranchisement where congressionally they have a lot more influence over our budget. And so what happened is that during the sort of congressional fight over the continuing resolution, they left out a piece of language that allows DC to spend at its current budgetary levels. And so what that meant was that for our current budget, which runs through the end of this September, we were going to have to spend at about $1 billion sort of gap between the sort of past budgetary levels and our current budgetary levels. And so essentially what happened is the mayor delayed the budget in the hopes that this issue would be fixed. There was a lot of really dope organizing that was happening to try to push Congress to release those local funds. But that sort of delay continued even past the time where it was very clear that Congress wasn't going to act. And so the mayor finally released the budget on May 27th, at a pretty significant delay, which has sort of made the entire process a little bit more constrained.
That's right. Yeah. And it was interesting, too, because many of us who were involved in this work were waiting to see, like, could folks get involved in the hearings, right? The city council, mm-hmm. once the budget is presented to them, have hearings that are meant for folks to give their input. Like, what do I think about this proposed budget? Where do I think that my taxes should be spent? And that really caused a lot of what's the word? Like, just folks didn't know when it would happen.
And a lot of confusion.
A lot of confusion when to register and how to participate. And I'll just share it. Something brief I heard. I was able to catch DCHA's the recording of the budget hearing for DCHA, and it was interesting. The chair of the committee, Robert White, said something to the effect, "Oh, I was surprised that not a lot of people registered and complained about housing conditions," which is something that typically happens. Folks use these as an avenue to bring up the very real issues they're living with, and they'll suggest this is why it's important to fund XYZ. And in my mind, I was thinking, the budget was just released. You guys just, gave the date. So it's like, people had to rush, and kudos to those folks who were able to do that, to register and to speak out and to say, what is important to them as district residents who are impacted by some of these decisions that the mayor made and then that the council will likely make. This is kind of a tough question, Michael, but if you could, and you guys, DC Fiscal Policy did a great recent blog post of the initial a look at the mayor's initial budget. Could you just talk to us, maybe big picture, what you saw in there, what's concerning? A lot of people saying that this budget is not really for the district residents, especially for low income district residents, working district residents. It puts folks in a very difficult situation. So what's kind of at stake? What should we be concerned about? And what did you all see, in the mayor's budget, if you could share some of that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'll start with this idea, and it's, it's maybe a little cliche at this point, but I think it's really true. Budgets are really moral documents, right? We think about our own personal budget. I think about my budget. I get stressed out about rent, about bills. And it feels like, there are these things that have to be, I have to spend on. And I think the mayor sort of relying on a bit of that feeling of, we're in troubling economic times, we have to cut, we have to do these things. But the sort of trade-offs that we're making, these are all decisions. These are active decisions about, what we're going to spend on, what we're not going to fund, who are we going to spend money on. And these are all sort of active decisions. And then the budget itself, the mayor has sort of referred to it as this growth agenda. Mm-hmm. And I think in practice, it really, I've heard our ED refers to it as an inequality agenda, right? It's really the money that we are spending is not going to our residents who are struggling with, rent or struggling with food. The budget does things like a $20 million cut to emergency rental assistance. It does things like repealing the DC Child Tax Credit and ending the Baby Bonds program, which are two, highly studied, highly researched, really effective means at lowering income inequality, wealth inequality, tightening the gap in wealth between the racial wealth gap. These are sort of proven strategies to do those sort of things, and this budget gets rid of both of them. The budget also cuts things like Alliance. And sort of Alliance, the healthcare, this healthcare program is essentially for folks who don't qualify for Medicaid in DC. That's largely an immigrant population. So it cuts them from that sort of higher, deeper healthcare program. And there are a few other situations where you'll see in the budget. So for DC, our budget spans not just this coming fiscal year, but the next few fiscal years. And so there are a few areas where you'll see the budget fund something like the pay equity fund, which is essentially a way for us to ensure that teachers in early education are paid well. And so in this current budget, it's funded for this coming year, but you see in the following years, it's zeroed out. So you see these kind of like a little sneaky shadow cuts to programs in some of the out years.
You know, so, I mean, and I'm no budget specialist, and but you know, I was able to read and I read your blog post, and given what you're sharing, you know, some of the big buckets that people are going to be hurt in around are food, access to food, right? It cuts TANF, it cuts I should know exactly what TANF stands for, but
temporary assistance to needy families.
Needy families. It cuts the SNAP program, which is another food assistance program. As you mentioned, it cuts the emergency rental assistance program, which helps people to pay their rent if they've fallen behind. It's a program that for a while now there's been some very bad talking points that people were using it as a slush fund. But we went from something near $60 million in funding over the past year or so to a proposed funding of $5 million for this year. So what does this mean? It's that there'll be a lot more folks unable to pay the rent. And kind of parallel to this, what's happening is there's some other legislation moving through the council by the mayor to essentially weaken some tenant rights. So what we're seeing is kind of this perfect storm of people not having money and less protections in the eviction space. So we could potentially see a lot more people facing housing instability or homelessness.
Not definitely.
So, you know, another big bucket is the housing. And then, of course, the insurance, which you've mentioned. And as you framed it, you know, and you're right, you know, oftentimes it's overused and it's like, yeah, budgets are a moral document. But what this city has, at least right now, it's not showing through its budget that it has any real foresight and that it's going to use those folks who have the least and use them as scapegoats. You know, that we've seen this narrative of, you know, people needing to get to work, people needing to pay their rent, people needing to stop using all these government services, when it's not like folks are staying at some big fancy hotel through some voucher and eating, you know, through some, you know, fancy food program every day. Right. Folks are just barely making it. Barely. And that barely making it is being threatened. You know, as you've been going through this process, you know, what have you been hearing from folks in these spaces that could be affected?
Yeah. And so I want to pick up on a couple points you made. The first, you know, the talking about some of the so the budget kind of has the parts of it that you would expect. It's, you know, a lot of numbers. Where are we spending money? But the budget also comes with sort of a set of legal changes that are essentially, they're supposed to be, you know, the necessary changes to current law to enact the current budget. But what we've seen in this budget is a lot of really significant sort of negative changes being pushed through. So things like repealing some of our sanctuary city protections, things like the repeal of I-82, the sort of tip minimum wage. We've seen proposed reductions in the buildings that qualify for the Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act, which is, you know, one of our core protections for renters in the city. And so it's kind of coming back to this idea that this, you know, it's this budget is in a lot of ways a kind of direct attack on folks who are the most vulnerable, right? And so I think that that's one of the sort of big issues that I see, that I hear folks talking about, is a lot of fear around some of these changes, a lot of fear around the changes to the sanctuary city, our sanctuary city status, a lot of fear around this sort of unilateral attempt to repeal I-82, a lot of fear around the loss of rights, which is something that I think, if I think about the morals of, you know, my neighbors and my friends who live in the city, this isn't in alignment with those.
Yeah. And so, you know, the other kind of thing, as you mentioned earlier, and I want to pull it up right quick to see exactly what the mayor calls it. Mayor Bowser presents Grow DC, our fiscal year 2026 budget, right? So everything grows and everything needs to grow. We don't want to stunt or stop growth. Sure. However,
we love to grow. You know,
yeah, we have to also maintain, if we're using kind of a vegetation theme here, the crops that we currently have, right? Not to reduce individuals to crops or anything like that, but we're playing this metaphor game that this budget is using. You know, it almost appears, and my colleague and a friend of ours, Farah Fosse, who works with us, you know, often will say, you know, they are planning for future DC, right? For the people who they're trying to get people to come to the district and work in the district. And that is always something that is needed. You know, it's something that we've seen happen here in the district way back in several administrations calling for the growth of the district. So that's nothing new. However, it's like this budget has been put together for future people, not for the people that are here now. Sure. Any thoughts on that idea of, like, who are we really growing this city for?
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts on that idea. I mean, I think, you know, to maybe continue to butcher the metaphor, if you have a garden and there are maybe two or three plants that are really succeeding, you don't then just only water those plants and just neglect everything else in your garden. And that's what this budget really does. You know, I'm sure, you know, you also spend time at the Wilson Building, where, you know, with the council. And every time I've gone there in the past few months, what I've heard is, you know, there's no, you know, don't expect for a lot of funding. There's no money. It's a tight, you know, fiscal situation. And, you know, DC is facing some real economic challenges. And yet, what this budget does do is it finds close to $1 billion to support RFK Stadium, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And so, you know, it really puts the lie to this narrative that there's no funding for things like emergency rental assistance. There's no funding for things like paying our early education teachers. There's no funding for making sure folks that are, you know, under attack by the federal government are supported in the city. When you look at the budget, it's just functionally not true. There is money. There are ways of finding money. There are ways of raising money that we can also talk about. And so, you know, the other thing that I would say about this kind of growth agenda is that this idea of, okay, we'll invest in the stadium, or we'll invest in, you know, tax breaks for tech companies, you know, this kind of trickle down economics, right, where you support the highest income folks in an area and sort of hope that they sort of share the economic benefit is just, it just has been, you know, proven to not be an effective strategy. We've seen it both in history and also in research about economies and about downturns. The way that you pull yourself out of those situations is by investing in your residents, investing in everyday people who are going to put that money back into, you know, their neighborhoods and into their economy.
No, that's right. And, you know, one thing, and I don't know, you know, if you have anything to share on this, but one of the things that I heard through some of our work along with the Fair Budget Coalition was there seemed to be not much interest in revenue raisers in ways to grow the revenue aside from, you know, tickets and kind of the normal stuff. Of course, as we're seeing federal employees being fired, being, you know, pushed out of their jobs, we're seeing people leave. And of course, that has an impact. Very real. We can't deny that. But as you mentioned, there are other ways that cities can make money, especially when, you know, those who are doing very, very well, it's not like everybody is doing badly, you know, are not putting in their fair share. Not to necessarily repeat what you're saying, but, you know, any thoughts on this kind of, which to me seems an apprehension on revenue raisers to help get us out of this situation?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think when you talk about raising revenue, there's a sort of remarkably different conversation when you're talking about, you know, this budget balances itself largely on the backs of, you know, low income folks. And there's a sort of different fear about, you see the sort of the mayor being willing to do that. And there's not that same fear as there is when you talk about raising revenue from maybe taxing the top 1% in the city. Then you see all of this like, oh, we can't do that in this economy. The sort of there's a really stark difference in the way we talk about those things that I think is, I'll say that's interesting. But I do think that at the federal level, they're talking about tax breaks to the top 1%. And I think in DC, that's folks who have an annual income of over $1 million. And I think that's really an area where we can ask those folks to really contribute their fair share, given the tough economic times that we're considering. I think there's a real possibility of doing that, to be able to invest in some of these things that are really necessary for the survival for a lot of people in DC.
That's right. And you alluded to a little earlier, but let's just talk a little bit about the stadium, right? Now the mayor is really pushing forward this idea that we need this new football stadium. We need to bring back the district's football team, which that's a tough narrative to push against, right? So sure. Many people love the district's football team, would love to see them back. But of course, that comes at a literal cost, right? Which I think you spoke to. And if I'm not mistaken, stadiums aren't like they're not going to pay back on the investment like they usually do. I don't think either of the two stadiums we currently have, both the soccer and baseball stadium, have created such a revenue base that we were like, man, we're glad to have those. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little bit about just the impact that could potentially have?
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, you hinted to this, you know, people love the Commanders. They just had a great season. And I think if you ask people, you know, do they want the Commanders back in the city, full stop, and that's all you ask, you get a much different answer than if you ask folks, do you want the Commanders back in the city at the cost of $1 billion in this budget? And then, you know, the projections over the lifetime of the deal vary, but, you know, the projection that I've seen come through pretty commonly is an expectation of almost $6 million over the lifetime of the deal between like actual direct funding, between giveaways around the land, between giveaways around the rights. So I think if you frame it around what people would have, what DC would have to give up in this current deal, then you get a much different answer. And so, you know, as you sort of mentioned, this current budget for fiscal year 26 includes, I think it's around $500 million directly for the stadium. There's something like almost $400 million for parking as it relates to the stadium. We're also, you know, if you think about the RFK campus, it's a pretty significant plot of land. It's right by the river. And that land is being, under the current deal, given away at, I think it's like $5 a year to the Commanders. And then also the development rights won't actually be held by the city. So you kind of see this remarkable amount of generosity being displayed and the hopes that, you know, that the stadium will sort of generate this massive investment back in the city. And, you know, we've been building stadiums in this country for a long time. There's a great deal of evidence about the economic impact of doing that. And every piece of research that I have read suggests that public subsidies for stadiums do not pay off in the long run. And actually, NFL stadiums are among the least efficient in terms of the long-term economic payoff because they're used so rarely. You know, it's 10 games a season and then a few concerts that might be large enough to justify being held at the stadium, but otherwise it sits pretty empty.
That's right.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. I mean, I think that's part of the, and thank you, Michael, for helping us break this down, because that's part of what we really want to make sure folks have a good understanding of what's behind all of this, right? Some of this stuff sounds good. People should be paying their rent. Yes, I pay my rent. I'd hate to see other people, you know, not paying their rent. But what's the real story behind all of that is that rents are just, you know, really, really high in the District of Columbia. People should just get a job. Are there living wages, you know, jobs with livable wages in this city? We're seeing the repealing of the TIPS legislation, right? So in any way that folks try to play the game, as it were, it's being made a lot more difficult. And then, of course, as you mentioned, if you just ask somebody, you want the Commanders back? People are like, yes, of course. Obviously, but, you just like broke it down, right? There's so much else to take into consideration. So I think we are faced, with some very difficult times, not just now with this immediate budget, but the long term. I want to talk a little bit about the Fed, because I think what we also now have to take into consideration is that we're waiting for this federal hammer to drop as well. Like, what is the federal government going to do, and how is that going to affect everything else, here in the district and around the country? Because we're heading into a recession here in the district, if we're not in one already, and potentially one on a national level. Then, if it's okay, then I'd like to just talk to a little bit, like, where are we now with the budget? Like, what's happening? What have we heard? And to give folks a little understanding of that process. But before that, let me just remind folks, you are tuned into Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. We thank you so much for your listenership. I am joined this afternoon by Michael Cohen. Michael is the Senior Policy Analyst at the DC Fiscal Policy Institute. And we've been talking about, so far, about what's happening with the budget, the fiscal year 26 budget that the mayor presented quite a bit late to the city council. And that's what I mean. We'll talk about that whole process in just a minute. But we've been discussing what's in it and how really it fails many low-income district residents. And it's kind of this, you know, we probably talk about it here, not just us, but, you know, every day here on WPFW, but about the inequalities that exist and who gets more and who gets less and the reasons why. And I think this is, you know, more of that. And we should really be aware about what's happening. I know this is not necessarily your main lane, but I'm sure you've been looking at it as it relates to the district. Could you talk to us just a little bit about, you know, what's happening with the federal budget and why we should keep an eyes on that and be concerned about that as it relates to the district?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, as you mentioned, I engage with the federal side of the city as much as I have to, which unfortunately is more than ever. But what we see at the federal level is, you know, the House's current budget that I think is being considered by the Senate currently makes a lot of really draconian cuts to a lot of the programs that folks really rely on in DC and across the country. So you see pretty significant cuts to things like SNAP, which stands for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And so you see really significant attempts to push people out of that program. You're seeing things like calls for more stringent work requirements. You're seeing cuts to the Affordable Care Act. So really cuts to things like basic needs. We're talking about food assistance. We're talking about healthcare coverage. We're talking about significant cuts to Medicaid, right? And so when we think about what's happening at the federal level, we kind of, you know, with this current administration, you kind of expect these really, you know, deep, terrible cuts to folks who really need to be receiving more support, right? And what's the real tragic thing, though, is that those cuts, proposed cuts at the federal level, really also align with a lot of the cuts that are in the mayor's budget, right? We're talking about the same groups of folks. And again, just coming back to this idea of these are moral decisions, right? I think the DC that I know, the DC that I believe in, you know, having seen these potential cuts at the federal level, we would be investing in things like our local support for Medicaid. We'd be investing in things like temporary assistance for needy families. We would be trying to offset these sort of draconian measures at the federal level. But what we actually see in this budget is it being balanced on the backs of those same folks who are kind of facing this sort of double whammy from potential federal cuts and the potential local cuts. And I think that part of it's like a real tragedy.
No, yeah, thank you for that. You know, as we engage with our folks, our base, our membership, and just folks we engage with in generally in doing organizing work in the district, you know, what we hear is this concern, because it's not like, oh man, they're cutting my SNAP benefits, so I'm going to have to figure out, you know, how to get more food. It's across the board, right? It's folks aren't single issued. They're not going to just be affected by one of these budget cuts. It's going to be, for many folks, it's going to be, as we mentioned, those big buckets: housing, health, food, you know, those things that literally keep us alive. Many folks are faced with, you know, seeing cuts, seeing these, you know, draconian measures, as you mentioned earlier, happening. Like, folks are like, dang, if, you know, one of the federal things I hear is some sort of mandate that people, you know, able-bodied Americans, you know, either get some work or they'll have to leave public housing or you know, subsidized housing, mm-hmm. Only being a benefit to folks for 2 years. And it's like, I don't know if I've in several meetings, you know, where we've been speaking about this, and I don't know if I'm being naive, but, you know, I'm like, that discussion does not seem to be happening. Like, everybody on the city council, the mayor, anybody with half a mind, and anybody that is feeling these impacts knows something bad is going to happen, right? We're not going to head into a positive place. This is not going to turn the city around, this country around, and we're not going to see people being like, hey, thank you for pushing me out of my housing. Now I have a job and I can afford healthcare and I can afford to eat. Folks are going to be even more dependent because they're going to be, you know, put into this very negative situation. So, you know, for me, like, part of the big question is, like, when are we going to start to have that discussion?
No, right?
Like, what are the results of how are we going to deal with the results of what's happening now?
The
situation we're putting folks in.
I mean, you think about, you know, thinking about the cuts to emergency rental assistance, right? Or, you know, the city is also considering changes to our eviction process to try to make it faster, easier for landlords to evict their tenants. And the question that I don't think I've heard from anyone on the council, where are people supposed to go? Mm-hmm. If, you know, we know that over half of the people, it's over 50% of the Black folks in this city are housing burden. It's essentially they're paying a really significant amount of their income in rent. If we're saying to folks who are struggling with rent or maybe are behind on rent, there's no emergency rental assistance available for you and your eviction's going to come faster and swifter than ever, what are folks supposed to do when that happens? And I think you laid out really beautifully that, you know, these things don't exist in silos, right? You know, being evicted has wide-ranging impacts, not just on your housing, but on your ability to feed your family. It has impacts on, you know, kids' educational outcomes. And then, you know, if you look at this budget, we're not just, you know, cutting emergency rental assistance. We're also, you know, reducing folks' access to TANF, right? We're also taking away investment over the long term in our early educators, right? These things have a multiplying effect on each other. And so it's in a lot of ways, it's almost even worse than if you take any one of these individual cuts or any one of these areas where we're not, you know, investing in people, because they're all gonna impact each other.
That's right. No, thank you for that. And I forgot to mention to folks, you know, if you have any opinions, if you are being directly impacted or feel like you'll be directly impacted, give us a call, share your story briefly. I'll add, though, but we would love to hear from some folks. 202-588-0893 is a number to call. 202-588-0893 is a number to call if you want to share your opinion on the budgets and the discussion we've been having here for the past hour now. Michael, if you would please share with folks, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the mayor presented her budget, although not a little bit late, a lot of bit late. There was some tension from the chair of the council saying, when are we going to have it? It needs to happen. Finally happened. Now we know what the mayor has planned, right? The mayor has heard from all her agency heads. They've said, here's the information on our agencies, and the mayor and her team decided this budget, right? So they have now given it to the city council. Can you talk to us about these next steps in this process? Like, what's happening now with the budget?
No, absolutely. So what's happening now is that each committee on the council, so there are committees that, you know, that have oversight over different agencies within the government. So there's a committee on housing, there's a committee on health. And so each of those committees is having a series of what are called budget oversight hearings. And those are really open hearings. Anyone can sign up to attend and testify about the agencies that are up for discussion. You can really easily go to the council website and find what hearings are coming up. And I will say that, you know, because of, you know, you mentioned this, because of the timeline, you know, they started the budget dropped on, I think, the 27th of May, and oversight hearings happened that same week, right? And people didn't have time to engage with the budget. People didn't have time to really prep for that. And so I think because of that, I think it's a really imperative for folks to try to get out and hear directly from, get the council to hear directly from people who are being impacted by this budget. And so those sets of hearings will continue through the end of this week. And then on the 18th, I believe there's a something that's called the Committee of the Whole. Essentially what that is the entirety of the council will come together. And it's sort of a broad conversation about the budget. A lot of folks will be testifying. That's a really good time for folks who want to get plugged in to come testify. There are a few organizations that you can definitely reach out to. I think you mentioned the Fair Budget Coalition, Empower DC. I haven't been paid to say this. Y'all are dope organizers. Also great folks to reach out to if you want to testify, but you're a little nervous. There's definitely support out there. Yeah, but that big Committee of the Whole hearing is a good time for folks to really have their voices be heard. And then after that hearing, each of those committees, about a week later, will sort of do their own markups of their sort of sections of the budget.
And that's where the budget really starts taking shape, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I mean, we have a pretty good idea of where it is and potentially end up. But, after these hearings and after these committee markup meetings, we start to see what the council can do. Right. If I'm not mistaken, the council can't add or take money away, but they can certainly shift stuff around. So we'll probably be seeing some of that happen. And then there are some votes, and then there's some federal stuff that needs to happen. Can you talk to us a little bit about that as well?
Yeah. So I would say that period between the Committee of the Whole hearing and the budget markups is really the sweet spot if you're trying to influence the budget. And I will say, so DC, like other states, does have to balance its budget. But the council could add revenue raisers at this point. So I think that's a really critical point, that there's still an opportunity for the council to include new revenue. They would just have to specify where that revenue would come from. So I think that period of time is really important. And then after the markups go, after the committee markups happen, there's a sort of a little bit of a shifting around that's largely driven by Chairman Mendelson. And then there are two votes on the budget. So every piece of legislation in DC has a first vote, a second vote. And then after that second vote, the budget then goes back to the mayor.
And I, what is fiscal policy working on? If you could share just a little bit about the general work that you all do. I keep hearing, your ED is testifying at this hearing, which is amazing. And of course, as I mentioned, what really sparked my request to Michael to join us today was this great blog post that you all shared with the community, really kind of breaking down what's in the mayor's initial budget. But talk to us a little bit more about the work of the Fiscal Policy Institute.
Yeah, for sure. So I think you really nailed a big piece of what we try to do is we are really trying to help folks. The budget can be presented as this really, arcane, difficult to understand set of documents, and it is that. And I think that it's set up that way intentionally. That's my little personal conspiracy theory. But a lot of what we do is try to help folks understand what's in the budget, help folks understand what's possible, and to sort of cut through some of the, again, this sort of rhetoric that, because we're facing tough fiscal times, we have to, approach this austerity mindset of like no new spending, unless it's for the stadium. And so we want to help folks understand what's possible. I think we have a really good blog up that talks about some of the potential revenue raisers. So things like a millionaire tax, things like a business activity tax. And so trying to help folks understand what's possible. And so in addition to that, that sort of piece of what we're doing to help demystify the budget, we try to provide, you know, good, solid, well-researched commentary on the different parts of the budget. So I've been testifying around some of the housing pieces of the budget. We've done testimony around some of the more economics focused issues around the budget. We testify around early education. So a couple different issue areas where we try to put out sort of good, solid, well-researched information to help folks understand what's happening.
Yeah, and if folks would like to find out more, how can they do so?
Yeah, so you can find out more from dcfpi.org. Every time I say this to people in person, they're like, wait, you work for the FBI? I do not. it's P. And then you can also find us on social media. We're on X and Blue Sky. So you can find information out from us there as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. Well, folks, as I mentioned, we're drawing to a close. We do still have a couple of minutes where we could potentially take a call if anybody is interested in sharing, have a question or sharing anything related to the budget discussion we've been having. But in general, want to thank Michael for, you know, coming down or joining us rather this afternoon to, as he mentioned, demystify the budget. I think it is a very big document. It comes with volumes, appendices, and so on and so forth. But let me say, Control F is a friend of mine. You open up the budget and you hit Control F and you type in what's important to you, an agency, it's not that hard to find. It does take some time. Don't lose sight that, you know, there are ways to find out what's happening in the budget. And I think the other, you know, points that I'm walking away with from our conversation, Michael, this afternoon is, you know, we really do have to be honest and keep an eye on who is this hurting. Like, we can't lose sight of that. Who is this hurting and who is this benefiting? Because you hear the narrative and it makes it seem like, oh my gosh, we have to take these steps because, so, you know, we've got to get this right. There are plenty of people who are enjoying this city, are enjoying its restaurants, its playgrounds, adult playgrounds, all the amenities that are out here, safe, clean, healthy living, parks, recreation, all of that. And we're not, I'm personally am not saying they shouldn't have that. I'm saying everyone should have access to that, right? We should all have, as the mayor likes to say, a fair shot to all of that, because what we're seeing is this inequality that unfortunately, oftentimes we like to say, you know, look how far we've come. But you look at this document, you would think we're, you know, back many years from now. Mm-hmm. So I think we cannot lose sight that this inequality still exists, that people who have, who have been hurt historically by documents such as city budgets are continuing to be hurt. And those same people who always benefit from this inequality are continuing to benefit. So let's not lose sight of that. And let's make sure that we are, being involved in the capacities that we can. Michael, as we close up the show, you know, any last thoughts, any last things you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I want to touch on something you sort of mentioned. Definitely Control F is your friend. I encourage folks to pop open the budget documents. They are, you can definitely get to a place of understanding, but I think it's also really important to say, you know, it can be really daunting to go testify. It can be really daunting to talk to your council person. But don't let those documents, don't let the sort of budget you know, the complexity of it dissuade you from, again, this moral understanding? You can testify without having, you know, an expert's knowledge of the budget. You can tell folks what's important to you from your city's budget. You can tell folks that you want to invest in affordable housing. You can tell folks that you support the immigrants in the city. You can tell folks that, you know, we should be investing in assistance to families. You can do that without having a perfect understanding of what's in the budget. And I think it's actually really important to that the council hear, not just from, you know, folks like myself or folks who are paid by, you know, wealthy interests, when they're sort of going through this process.
Yeah, I think, you know, the counter narrative is always very important, and the resetting of narratives. Oftentimes, you know, we hear these big narratives in the news or in the public, and they're easy to believe. Yeah, why should people be allowed to not pay their rent and have all these rights to stay housed? You know, when you really start looking at, and unraveling that, there are a bunch of good reasons why. So I think I really appreciate what you are encouraging, Michael, is, you know, people's lived experience is really the most important. How am I going to be affected? How will this affect my family? And you should know this, elected officials, right? You weren't elected. You know, theoretically, yes, balancing a budget is probably in your work description, but making sure that district residents, you know, are healthy, are fed, have a place to rest their hat, and have a home that is safe and decent. I think those are the real things that we elect folks for, and that we really expect. And, you know, one of our members recently just broke it down like that. They should, you know, these folks that are making these decisions really need to think about why we elected them, why we put them in these positions. And it's because we need help. We can't do it alone. You know, we're trying our best, but we really will always need some support. I'm getting on a capitalist soapbox.
I'm right here with you.
I will try not to. I'll step off that ledge briefly, but to say once again, thank you, Michael, for the information you provided. I hope this has been helpful to some of our listeners, if not all, you know, to get a better understanding of where we are with a budget, some of the major concerns that this points out in the short term, but also in the long term. We've got, you know, a lot of things to consider for the years ahead, and let's continue making sure that we take care of those folks in our society who need that care and love, if I'm bold enough to put that idea out there. So thank you so much, Michael. Really appreciate your work, the work of the DC Fiscal Policy Institute. And we look back to having you on, and maybe we'll have just a little bit better of a discussion.
No, absolutely.
On where this budget ends up.
I have faith.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much. Folks, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. It means so much for you to listen, to support this program, and we look forward to having you to being with you every Tuesday afternoon. So we'll catch you next Tuesday. Make sure to stay tuned here for the News and Democracy. Excuse me. Just make sure to stay tuned. I'm a little caught up here. Yes. So thank you so much, and we will catch you next Tuesday.
The 2025 Home Rule Music Festival opens Friday, June 13th with a dynamic youth musical showcase at Woolly Mammoth Theater, highlighting the next generation of go-go and jazz artists. Then, on Saturday, June 21st, the festival continues with a live performance by Backyard Band and Plucky and the Oneness of Juju, and other standout artists representing go-go and jazz. The festival also includes live DJ sets, record fair, vendors, and community activities. Details at homerulemusicfestival.com.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Today, the Pentagon said that President Trump's deployment of 4,000 National Guard members and 700 Marines to protests over immigration raids in L.A. is costing $143 million. Yesterday, California Governor Gavin Newsom said his state will file a lawsuit against the Trump administration for this deployment of military personnel, which California did not request or consent to. The protests began in downtown L.A. over the weekend in response to a series of deportation raids in areas of the city with large immigrant populations. Angry protesters swarmed L.A. streets, blocking a major highway and setting vehicles on fire, while law enforcement fired tear gas, rubber bullets, and detonated stun grenades. Governor Newsom says the presence of the National Guard and Marines have only inflamed the situation. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Health and Human Services Secretary, has fired all 17 members of the CDC's vaccine panel. This panel consisted of independent medical and public health experts who review vaccine data and make crucial recommendations to determine who is eligible for shots and whether insurance agencies should cover them. Experts have responded to the firing of this panel with great concern, saying the move undermines science, disrupts a trusted regulatory process for shots, and could increase public distrust in both vaccinations and federal health agencies. They also say it can threaten public health, eroding the already decreasing immunization rates in the U.S. against once common childhood diseases and make the nation less equipped to handle new or existing outbreaks of vaccine-preventable diseases. Experts warn that Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is a known vaccine skeptic, could try to appoint members to this now fired panel who are sympathetic to his anti-vaccine views. Music fans are mourning the loss of iconic artist Sly Stone, who passed away yesterday at age 82. Born Sylvester Stewart in March 1943, he came to be known as Sly after a classmate misspelled his first name as Slyvester, and the nickname stuck. Sly Stone rose to fame as the leader of the band Sly and the Family Stone, who had several hits in the 1960s and 70s, blending funk and psychedelic soul, including Everyday People, Stand, Family Affair, and Dance to the Music. In later years, Stone mostly stayed out of the public eye, but was present for awards that he and his group received, like their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1993, and a tribute at the 2006 Grammys. In 2023, he released his autobiography, named after another hit song, Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself. In 2025, he was the subject of the Questlove documentary entitled Sly Lives, aka The Burden of Black Genius. Sly Stone is survived by his children. To the D.C. area, plans are moving forward for the massive military parade celebrating the Army's 250th birthday this Saturday. The event, which is expected to bring about 200,000 people to the National Mall, also coincides with the president's 79th birthday. The parade will include thousands of soldiers and start at 6:30 p.m. Saturday and go along Constitution Avenue from 23rd Street to 15th Street Northwest. There will also be a military flyover to mark the occasion, resulting in the temporary closure of Reagan National Airport from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. on Saturday. Festivities will include fireworks, a concert, celebrity appearances, and a showcase of hundreds of military vehicles and equipment. Anti-Trump demonstrators are also planning a No Kings protest targeting this weekend's event. In today's weather, it's currently about 83 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe, and thank you for listening.